back, you can play it over and over again, you could take little excerpts, you can mix it, you could fuck with it even. You could even could even mix it around to make me sound like I'm saying I love Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, you just said it, so you go.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I don't have to mix anything now.
Fuck.
I had a secret affair with Travis Shaw, and I love Donald Trump.
Exactly. It's finally out in the open. The reason why I'm pissed at Travis Shaw is because he doesn't love me. Yep. Damn it.
My daddy wants you to know a lot of the episodes have mostly clean language, but this episode has some words in it that aren't meant for all ages. So, if you have kids like me in your house, you may want to put some headphones on for this one. You've been warned. Done, done, done.
Tervetuloa, which is welcome in Finnish. We are nowhere near finished, by the way. That was a horrible joke. But every once in a while, you got to drop one of those dad jokes. You know, it's daddy unscripted. You kind of expect that from us dads. I hear a lot about that from my normal job, my 9-to-5 employees. So I dropped the dad joke. What am I going to do? But welcome, everybody, to Daddy Unscripted. My name is Tim Wheaton. I am the creator and the podcast host of Daddy Unscripted. I am very proud to bring to you this Fork in the Road episode with Joe Bruzzese. Also, you may know him as just simply Bruzzo or Joe Bruzzo. He is a force amongst Red Sox and Boston Bruins fans in the world of Twitter, a force to be reckoned with. And we talk about that a little bit in this episode as well. But he and I go into some very passionate discussion about a great many things that we both are very interested in and that we share common interests in. So you'll learn a lot more about Joe and what makes him tick and what makes him a ticking bomb sometimes. And I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. Like my daughter said, there's some language in this. There's a lot of language in this. So make sure that you are aware and ready for the F-bombs. There isn't a ton. It's not like a Tarantino film or anything like that. So don't get too scared away. Anyway, so we are here and happy to bring this episode to you. So sit right back and enjoy this fork in the road conversation with myself and Joe Bruzzese.
Just like, it's just like Will Middlebrooks, you know? You know, he reminds me of him, you know? I mean, dude, I almost had a man crush on fucking Will Middlebrooks because you see how he's handsome, chiseled. He looked good at the plate. He looked good. And then he fucking, I don't know what happened, man. He just fizzled out. No, I almost bought his shirt. I almost bought it. I just called him Middlebrooks. So that's his fucking name now because I'm not even going to try to fucking correct myself now that we're recording.
Well, now you've got to do one of those custom made jerseys and just put Whittlebrooks on it. See how many people catch that.
Exactly. So, you know, I just saw that, this is beside the point, but Carrie Fisher's mom just fucking died.
Yep.
What the fuck? A day after? Yeah, that isn't connected. That's connected, dude. I'm sorry.
Oh, absolutely. They said she basically had a stroke. They thought she had a stroke, and it's crazy. I mean, we're kind of like, we're just at that age where
that's what I was going to say. That's what it is. That's what my dad said, too. He's like, dude, it's like everybody's, you know, I mean, Peter Fonda's getting there. Keith Richards is getting there. Greg Allman's getting there. I mean, especially the musicians. I mean, Paul McCartney's fucking getting old. Everything's. Yeah.
If you really want to get into it, like Bob Weir.
Yeah, Bobby, dude.
Phil Lesh.
I know, man. Phil, forget it. I mean, when those tickets just went on sale for the Shoreline shows, that thing in me, you know, I mean, of course I want to see the band, but it's also kind of sad. Like when I bought the tickets, I'm like, fuck. You know, I don't know how many more times this is going to be able to happen.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, because for me, Phil Lesh is Phil Lesh without Bob Weir. I get it. I love him. He's a grandpa. the base. And I love what he does. But when Bob Weir goes, there's no more Dead. I mean, they can't they can't do Dead and Company without Bob Weir. I mean,
right? Yeah.
I mean, you know, you know what I mean? I mean, the only reason. I mean, even I love Phil Lesh's stuff. I mean, I could spend a whole segment on that, but I, you know, you can't do a. I mean, there's Phil Lesh and Friends, but then there's Dead and Company, man. Dead and Company without Bob Weir, like, come on.
Yeah. And the Let Phil Sing thing was really only good for one song.
Right, exactly.
Sorry. I can only take so much of Phil's vocals.
Me too, man. Especially at Fairly Well. I was like, oh, man, poor guy. I love you, dude. Please, that Let Trey Sing.
Exactly, yeah. That's when it became Let Trey Sing.
Yeah,
anybody.
Let him sing.
We are here for our Fork in the Road episode of Daddy Unscripted with Joe Bruzzese, otherwise known to a lot of you as Joe Bruzzo or just Bruzzo, but he is that guy. He is Joe Bruzzese on Twitter that a lot of you have grown to love and know as the very, very passionate Boston sports fan. And the incessant lover of the Red Sox. You got to love them. You got to hate to love them and love to hate them and exactly. Go through all the ups and downs. And
yeah.
So, Joe, welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
You know, we stepped away for a little bit, but for those of you listening, it's been a week or longer since you hopefully heard his daddy episode. And if you didn't, you can go back and listen to that now or after this or whatever with technology. It's amazing. But we are here to do our Fork in the Road, which we kind of figured will involve both sports and music because we are akin. We are soul brothers in our passion of both things. And we happen to match up in many ways on both of those, and it sounded like a non-heterosexual dating advert, but
that's all right.
Yeah,
but, my family will love it. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Your family in Boston is going to love that.
I'll send them each a copy.
Yeah, I knew it. You were saying how you were wearing the apron out there, and you're talking to this other guy in California, and. You guys are sending voice texts to each other.
Yeah. That's fucking fabulous. That is so great. Seriously, I'll send them a link.
There you go. Yeah. You can just put a big rainbow on it for them and that'll make sure that they understand what they're stepping into.
Oh, that's great. Oh,
so we were just kind of talking before we officially kicked this off about music, and that made me want to start the episode because I want to get into that part with you because we are both very much into the jam band scene and very much into the Grateful Dead, old and new, and Fish and all of that. So take me back to where that started with you. Where did your musical cultivation come from?
It's funny, you know, it would probably start with the Allman Brothers. My dad is a Allman Brothers fanatic. I mean, I woke up every fucking morning of my life listening to, you know, Fillmore East, just like constantly playing on the record player. That and Eat a Peach, just like grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
The Dead, my dad was basically kind of like, he knew of the Dead, but he wasn't really a Dead head or like, I think he had American Beauty and what else did he have? What's the cover?
Maybe Working Man's Dead.
Working Man's Dead. Yeah. And then, you know, it's kind of like he grouped them together, kind of like how he would, I think he even has two U2 albums, like War and Unforgettable Fire or something, mm-hmm. you know, like he kind of dabbled into the, but jam band wise, I think the Allman Brothers, man, he dragged me to Allman Brothers shows everywhere. I mean, we even went on planes to see the Allman Brothers. I forget all the places we went to see the Allman Brothers. Huge Allman Brother fan. He's now a big Derek Trucks fan. So basically with Fish, I mean, this is a weird story. One of my buddies who actually helped cultivate my writing of guitar in my style when I was writing one day. He's all, you know what? This was a long fucking time ago. I think this is when Junta came out. I don't know the year of that. You need to seriously listen to this guy. And, you know, this guy, Trey Anastasio. And I think at the time, I don't even know, is Trey Italian? Or is he, I don't know what he is, but it's either Greek or Italian. But at the time, I think I was so young. I'm like, oh, dude, he's Italian. You know, let's listen to him.
Yeah, I think Italian.
And then he put it on and that was it. So basically, I didn't hear Junta until it must have been like 90 or so then, right before we moved out here. Anyway, so the Grateful Dead, basically not until, this is really weird, probably 98 or so.
Oh, okay.
Like, honestly, like, I was pretty trapped in my own, like, as a musician, I was kind of trapped in my own web of my own stuff. So I kind of, I knew a lot of my friends were into Jerry Garcia and probably more Jerry Garcia than the Grateful Dead. Like, all my buddies had, like, all of the volumes of Jerry Garcia, like the Jerry Garcia band, him and, it's the black dude.
Saunders.
Yeah. Just amazing stuff. And then, what kind of brought me into the Dead even more passionately was, you know, 4 years ago with Dead & Company coming. I mean, I'm basically like, if you cut me in half, I'm Fish. I mean, Fish was my, you know, Fish is my, like mine, like my dad's, you know, like the Allman Brothers were my dad's, but the Dead has become, it's kind of, I'm not ashamed to say this, kind of like, it's a new bike for me. I mean, you know what I mean? It's 10, 15 years. It's not like, you know, like from birth or, you know, like hearing them when I was on a tricycle in the garage or something. But,
yeah.
And, you know, I could really give a kudos to, I mean, Bob Weir's Rat Dog got me kind of back into them again, like when that came out. And then it's kind of like, you know, John Mayer, to be honest with you, man, when my friends told me about Dead & Company, I laughed. I'm like, shut the fuck. Okay, great. Good. Get out of here. I don't fucking care. I'll go see Fare Thee Well. I thought it was amazing. It's the Dead. Well, don't give me this fucking John Mayer shit. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know the guy's a virtuoso because I know the music industry and what he's about. He's fucking phenomenal. I remember telling everybody he's phenomenal, but get him away from me. Like, I don't want to fucking see the guy with Dead & Company. So my brother-in-law takes me to fucking Dead & Company in the city. And that was it. I was like, my fucking balls were blown off, man. I mean, I was one of the last guys, I think, to accept it. I'm like, no. Yes! Fuck yes! Holy fuck! It's new! It's beautiful! Yeah. It's fucking, what have you done? Like, you know, what have you done to this music? But what about you? I mean, were you that scared of Dead & Company, or were you accepting it first? Or was
kind of... I think I was more acceptant of it because I had kind of, John Mayer is John Mayer, like his old stuff, like it's elevator background music. It's not bad. It's just sugary sweetness.
Yeah.
You know, it's
lovey.
Daughters and all that stuff. You know, it is what it is. But when I heard his trio stuff that he was doing and his bluesy stuff, and heard him cover Hendrix. Yeah. And there's even a version of what I went back to. And I remember playing this for my brother, who's a huge Fish guy. I turned him on to the Dead years ago. And it took him a while to finally come back to that. But I tried playing him this song that is on an album. I think it's maybe called Where the Light Is. It's a live double disc John Mayer thing. And it's what originally came out that had him playing Free Falling and whatever on it. He does a version of Gravity on that, which Gravity is a, you know, it's a pretty melodic, cool song, whatever. It's, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But there is a long version of that on that album that you can tell if you haven't heard anything from him that would signal to you that he is an amazing guitarist, that would be a definitely a clue in tune for people to hear. And I used to try to play that for some of my friends, and everybody would basically like turn their noses up at it and say, it's John Mayer. It's still John Mayer. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
But I think the partnering of him and the band to me was kind of, you know, it was kind of that, I know he can do it, but what is he going to bring to it? Is it going to be too bubblegummy? Yeah, is he really going to stretch himself out, or is he going to, which is it going to be the water tainting the oil or the oil tainting the water? You know what I mean?
Yes, I totally know what you mean.
I wasn't really afraid of it, and I think it was fantastic. I mean, if anything, you know, I felt like some of their age kind of slows it down a little bit, and hence you bring in J-Rad to the picture.
That's a
completely different ball of wax, you know.
God.
It's really cool. You almost need a diagram for some of this, the way that the tendrils kind of come together. But so originally I got into Benevento Russo because Joe Russo played for a while with Robert Walter in Robert Walter's 20th Congress. Have you heard any of their stuff?
Yeah, I have.
Okay.
Bumped out, man.
I love Robert Walter. Like, he basically reignited my hidden love for the Hammond, like, and his B3 work and whatever. Like, you know, my brother used to, when we would go to shows, he would comment on it and be like, I never kind of imagined you as somebody who would really dig on keyboards. And God, I used to just love going and watching 20th Congress. And it was also, you know, Cocheme Gastelum, who was on the saxophone and flute and whatever. And they were just so, so good. And then Joe Russo started playing with them. And when I saw him for the first time with them, my mind was blown. I mean, he just, what he was doing and playing sometimes, you know, the drums or the cymbals with like his elbows. And while he was doing stuff, I was like, what in the world is this guy doing? He's amazing. So I remember, and I've told Robert about this, I've seen him a couple of times and been able to talk with him. And it's really kind of funny. Wow. And I remember a show down in San Diego. I think maybe at Winston's, and God, this was, if I had to put a year to it, maybe 2001 or two. And I was talking with him after the show, and this kind of Wookiee-ish deadhead comes up and, you know, in his tie dye and whatever. And, you know, you could smell him before he was walking up. Apologies to other people. And he kind of interrupted us and was like talking. And then he was like, hey, what, you know, what about the Dead? What do you think about the Dead and these guys? And Robert at that time was like, I'm just not really into that. You know, I played jazz and, or boogaloo or whatever he was calling it. And, you know, I listened to a lot of that stuff, but I've just never really fancied them all that much. So it's really funny to me now how all of this has kind of taken this turn, and not saying that Joe was that same way, but seeing how all of these guys that were more in these kind of jazz groups, you know, Benevento and Russo being involved in J-Rad, and Robert being in with Mike Gordon, in with his band. There's like all these different kind of fingerlings that have gotten pulled into the core of it. And it's really cool to have seen that all kind of taking place from, you know, back in 2001, 2002 to now 15 years later of all this.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that was kind of my first experience with Russo. And I still have yet to see J-Rad because we were supposed to go this year when they were local, and unfortunately it wasn't able to happen. So I've yet to witness them live.
Yeah, I can't wait. I haven't seen them live yet either. I missed them in Oakland. They were there the day before I was there at the Trey Anastasio band, and I was like, wait, what? Now I'm all signed up on their stuff, so I won't miss anything. Like, you know, like the Twitter and the, I mean, their email thing, and I you know, I always research. I'm not going to miss them. They, I got into Russo and, I mean, the two of them because of, you know, I still am, but I'm a huge Medetsky, Martin, and Wood fan. Like they brought me because a lot of jazz when I was a teenager, my music took me into a lot of Miles Davis, of course, and fucking Coltrane and all that shit. And when it, you know, Medetsky, Martin, and Wood kind of branched that for people, you know, they really did. They fucking kicked that shit down. They completely just said, all you over here, listen to this shit. Come over here for a bit, you know, and let me show you this a little bit. Let me fucking show you this shit. And then from that jazz, they became psychedelic. I was just rabid looking for that again. And that's when I found Benevento Russo Duo. Like, I was like, okay, you know, I need a drummer, but that drummer, man, like, he just, I mean, you know, he's got bells and shakers, and whistles, and doing shit with one hand. And it reminds me of Russo so much. They're just like, they're like, they are a drum. You know what I mean?
Right.
They are a fucking drum. They're like,
it's incredible seeing what they can do and imagining how they are putting all of that together, not only with what they are doing. That's what astounds me as somebody who is not a musician. I mean, you are, the ability to kind of be in your own universe with what you are doing. And then, I mean, especially for a drummer, but linking it up with the other musicians and keeping the backbeat is, I mean, that's
like, world. And then, you know what? I mean, what you're just saying is completely why Russo has this. He's making, and there are drummers out there that can do this, but they are so hard to fucking find, man. And I'm saying, I don't know if you've heard of the Brian Blade Fellowship, but he's something you need to check out. However, Brian Blade, this cat, is, and Russo is this way, and Billy Martin is this way. Like, they aren't just drum. And I've taught this to people before. Like, I'm out of my mind right now, so I'm rambling. But the difference between drumming and turning it into a communication tool where they're actually, he's writing the music. Like, and then people go, what do you mean? What do you mean he's writing the music? And I'm saying, well, because the energy and the love that's coming off an innate object, that the tones are, you know, drum a drum, drum, drum a splash, splash, kick it. You know, these are dead sounds that are somehow turning into this warm, you know, like the chorus vibrato of a guitar pedal or so, like this, like they're giving it, it's not beat anymore. It's fucking like, it's song. Like, there's fucking song in that shit. Like, right. I mean, I love the Grateful Dead, but dude, fucking please. I mean, Billy, he drives me nuts. Like, I fucking want to just kick something when I listen to him, because when I was watching Fare Thee Well, and I was with my two buddies who, they'll never forget that experience, because I was just going the whole time. I was going, you know what the fucking problem is? The problem, poor Trey, the fucking dude, he can't go nowhere. The fucking guy can't take off because the drummers, and I love them to death equally, separately and together, but they can't fucking propel them to anything. They're just like kicking rocks. It's plat. And I'm, you know, Mickey Hart, he's different. He's got his own thing going on. He's got some energy going on over there. You can't hear it as much unless he's doing the drum solo, but he's definitely given the vibe in that music, like with the drums. But that Russo, man, I just showed him to my dad again during the holidays, like Christmas Eve. He's all, hey, put on that fucking trippy shit live from, and I'm all, oh, live from Boulder. It's actually that show on YouTube, Live from Boulder, just recently that they did. It's just like fucking, he's all, that drummer. He's all, I just can't keep my eyes off him. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, he's like, you know how like people thought Keith Moon was a good drummer for The Who, and he just pounded and he had that energy. He's like a smidget of that energy of that little elf that can come out of a drummer. That like a true songsman, like a, not just a blat, 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 you know, like fucking real love coming off that shit. And that's fucking rare, man. Like Fishman. Yeah. Fishman's got it going on, man. He's got both going on. He's got love and nerd all wrapped up in one little bow, you know? You know what I'm saying?
One little bow. Yeah.
One little bow.
One little dress.
Yeah. One little dress holding it all together.
Yeah. That is, I know I've sent you music of Umphrey's to check out, and I don't know if you've watched them on YouTube at all yet.
I have.
I didn't send you anything YouTube wise to watch, but you have to see them when they actually in March, they will be in, and I don't know how far is the Fox in Oakland from you?
Oh, dude, I'm right across the bridge. So,
you've got to go in March. Yeah. When you watch them,
I have to see them.
The real, being able to, they have little hand signals for key changes, for what they're going to do, timing changes, whatever. And it's just a full show of, everything now. Their lights are amazing. I would be hard pressed to choose a better lighting person, whether it was Waffle with Umphreys or CK5 with Fish. Their lighting is amazing. But then watching their communication with each other and what they do, and watching all of them play on their own and together is just, it's such a treat. It's really
phenomenal,
very, very enjoyable. Yeah.
Phenomenal fucking musicianship. That's what I have to say. My only, if somebody put a gun to my head and said, "What's Humphrey McGee?" I'm phenomenal musicianship. I was blown away by what I heard. I'm kind of ashamed that I haven't got on the bus. It's kind of that weird, when I first heard them, I think somebody had played something for me and it sounded so hard, like heavy. I heard a, and I was like, oh no, that's not for me. But now that I had gotten deeper into their thing, once you know what their thing is, what they are is they're just fucking geniuses. They're like little genius fucking elves, just playing their little fiddle things so eloquently and so fucking well rehearsed. And they're perfect. I was listening to them and I'm like, oh, wow. I'm like, okay. Kind of metrics, the meters or something.
You know what you would really dig is they have a thing on Spotify that's called From the Hip, is a set of improvisation, and it's with Joshua Redman, who they play with a bunch.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
He's and my you favorite, would, man. Come
oh,
on.
God.
Him and Brad Meldow and fucking, oh, dude, come on.
Yeah, he plays with them a lot, or I should say a good amount. And they did a show the beginning of this year in January at the Orpheum in Wisconsin. And I think Brendan starts it out by saying, "Give us a key to play in," and they pick whatever key somebody yells out, and the entire set is just improv.
Oh my god!
And it's amazing. Oh, you would love that.
Yeah, I fucking love that, dude. From the Hip. I just wrote that down.
So let's go. Let's go now to some sports stuff.
Yeah, man.
And you're from Boston, so you're
Bean Town, baby.
Your love for them makes a lot more sense than mine, but how involved was your family in that, or is it, was it you
dad.
With your kids,
it was,
friends?
It was my dad. I mean, my dad always had, the radio on always, and he had, my dad's famous for having the little transistor in his pocket, always having the game on, He's a big Patriot fan though as well, and I have to say the difference here because I don't like football. I'm not a football guy at all. Mm-hmm. If somebody touches me and falls on top of me, I'm gonna fucking kill you. I can't take it. It's not friendly fucking shit for me. If you're tackling me, we're fighting. Don't touch me. It's disgusting. But I love Tom Brady, and I'm not afraid to say that.
Yeah, me
and
too.
I've watched football because of Joe Montana and Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. And I even like Steve Young because I was out. California thing, whatever.
Yeah.
My dad is such, but he's, the Red Sox would infuriate him. And I think I grew up with a little bit of hearing, so much bitching. Fucking anybody from Boston would tell you. You go up to somebody to get a cup of coffee in the morning after a loss, right? And you don't have to fucking say good morning. You don't say hi. You don't say anything. What you do is you fucking give the order, you say, I want a coffee regular, whatever. And then they basically look at you and you both know. It doesn't matter whether you're the fucking drive-in person, the fucking a lawyer, a doctor, you're fucking anything. The person changing your tire. Everybody knows that fucking blah, blah just gave up the blah, blah and the blah, blah inning. The manager didn't take out somebody at the right time and everybody's bitching about it constantly.
Yeah.
So you go to store to store to store. You get a sandwich, you hear it. You go to the Star Market, you get milk, you fucking hear it. You hear it from the checker. You hear it from the fucking person getting the carts. You hear it when you're on your way home. You hear it on the radio. And then you hear it from your grandpa. You're like, oh, the fucking Red Sox are miserable. It's like, so growing up there was, yeah. I mean, I don't know how it is in other places, but I would imagine the more miserable the weather is, and I've determined this, right? The harder it is for you to get up and get inside your fucking car to go to work, right? Just to go to work. Mm-hmm. That's how pissed off more pissed you're going to be at your team. That's what I've totally determined that. I'm like,
is that based on Cleveland research?
Yeah.
That's got to be rooted in Cleveland for sure. I spent a lot of time, my old job, I had to go to Cleveland quite a bit. And oh my God, like, the weather there is miserable.
Yeah.
And it's different. It's a very different weather than on the East Coast. Oh man. I mean, I can't imagine if/when the Browns ever figure it out and turn that team around and win a Super Bowl. Like I really can't imagine what would happen out there.
Yeah. What would happen?
You know, I'm very happy for them for their Cavaliers win. Finally.
Wait, are you from Cleveland?
No. Actually, my mom was born out there and it was such a bummer because every time I went during baseball season, whenever I went, the Indians were away. Like every single time. And I would be, you know, I'd be flying home on Friday morning and that would be when they'd be returning for their weekend homestand. And finally, my very last trip out there, they were actually home. I, you know, bought myself a ticket to a game. I went by myself and walked the whole stadium like for half the game. It's actually a really cool stadium. I don't know. It was just, It was really cool finally being able to go there.
That's awesome.
Not like Fenway, of course.
Oh, fuck, dude. Yeah. Fenway, I mean, dude, you were lucky enough to fucking grow up around there, man. I mean, it was beautiful. I mean, there's just a gorgeous place to, and once again, it's not a comfortable place, but it's a very vivacious place. The people make it, you know, as soon as you know, you're around the stadium, as soon as you're trying to find parking, you can feel it. Just you can feel the sickness, smell the sickness, dude. You can just smell it. You know, you can taste the pain in the stadium. You're sitting there and you're like, what the fuck is that taste? And you're like,
It's everybody's tears. Yeah, and it's bitterness.
It is. It really fucking is.
So when you were a kid, how many games going to a bunch of games or?
Yeah, we probably went. I mean, to me, it felt like a lot. But now that I think back, it wasn't. It was like probably 3 games a summer or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of, you know, like the kind of middle class, whatever, we watched the games and we listened to the games. We actually had a ceremony that we would listen to the games outside a lot on a day game. Like it was really fun.
Oh, yeah.
Like I kind of grew up with the radio. That's why I use MLB, you know, the app on the phone.
Yeah.
I love listening to the audio. I fucking love the audio.
Same here. Yeah.
I love listening to audio. I love the radio. You know what I mean? I like listening to live. Like I even like listening to Felger and Maz, even though they're jackasses. They're fucking, it's at least it's live and it's fresh.
Right.
Like kind of like this is, except it's, you know, it's live.
It's too bad that they kind of screwed the pooch with getting rid of Orsillo.
Yeah, they did. They fucked that up. I mean, I think people, I probably take the other stance because I'm sick of hearing about it on Twitter, but I kind of get like, you know, like who's doing it now? The guy who did the radio all these years, you know,
Castiglione.
Yeah, Castiglione's still there. Yeah. And then that's O'Brien, right? He's doing it for us now.
Yeah, O'Brien and Steve Lyons, who's horrible.
Fucking horrible, dude. He is horrible because he's like, you can just tell what type of a guy he is, you know, it comes down to it. You're like, you don't want to listen to this fucking moron. He's like,
Yeah.
He's opinionated, but it's like, no, dude, you can tell he's trying to stroke what people might want to hear sometimes too.
And right.
You know, give me, I mean, you know, Eckersley is like fucking, he's
great.
He's fucking unbelievable.
Like, yeah.
His commentary is just like so fucking, you know, I tell Jared Carabas this all the time. I'm like, yeah, someday, dude, if you're ever a broadcaster of some sort or something, I could see you being a lot like Dennis Eckersley, where you're shooting right from the hip. You know, if he thinks fucking ridiculous, it's ridiculous. And he'll say it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and Steve Lyons is just he's riding the fence so hard. Like, you can tell it's like every one of his games.
Yeah.
It's almost as if he feels like he needs to save his job. Like, he's just really trying to not upset the apple cart. And it doesn't
annoying.
Work with this team.
It just doesn't work at all. Part of my, you know, and you hear, you hear all the shit, you know, people calling for John Farrell's job. And
yeah,
to tell you the truth, I'm kind of like, when I listen to the guy talk, you know, I don't even know whether I like him or not. I don't, I don't know whether I blame the manager as much as most people do, but I definitely have been blaming for the first year. Like, the decisions have been more glaring, I want to say. Like, where you're like, okay, and everybody has helped me see that, like the Twitter bloggers and people
who,
you know, they're like, they show me that, okay, like, that, you know, you learn everything with baseball, you learn every day, and you're like,
yeah,
you learn more about how they fucking shit up. And And
I think this year was so much like, I really liked Farrell, and I was excited when they got him.
So was I.
I mean, God, I wanted to like throw things out windows when they got rid of Tito.
Me too.
That was just such an unfortunate, like.
Yeah. And the whole way it went down.
Yeah. And then bringing in
to Bobby Valentine,
slapping
the dick.
Slap
in the dick, dude.
Just clearly showing that they really didn't know what they were doing.
They had no fucking clue. That front office has no fucking idea what the fuck they're doing. Yeah. I think Dombrowski has done a good job doing what what everybody thought he was going to be doing, you know, by getting rid of certain pieces and stuff. I hope
he's not a hit and run guy. I really do. Like,
yeah,
what we got rid of to get Pomeranz. And that's the thing. Like, you never know. Like, we won't know until 5-10 years down the road. Like, was that a horrible move? And it seems like it was, but who knows? And
I think it was for him, man. That was
for Pomeranz. It absolutely was. Yeah.
That's just, that inspired so many hateful tweets. I don't even know. I mean, that fucking kid, just like, come on. What the?
Yeah.
And then, dude, you know, even in the last game when he fucking coughed up that home run.
Yeah.
I haven't actually been well enough to go back and revisit any of it yet. I still have Porcello's 3 home runs. I have his 3 home runs, and I have Price's, how many?
Oh, God.
2?
Yeah, I think it was 2.
That's all I have in my head now. So I'm not ready.
I mean,
I'm not ready, man.
I was watching a game last night against Tampa, and I tweeted out a video of Poppy hitting this massive home run. And later on in that inning, I think they had 2 runners on, and Travis hit a mighty comebacker to the pitcher, and I almost rewound that bit just to send it to you and ask how much you were going to miss that this season.
I would have died if you sent me that, because that's hilarious. Yeah, good old Travis Shaw. Jesus, man.
So
I don't really have anything against the guy. I mean,
I think it was a matter of, you actually got a response. You know what I mean? Like, how many people ripped on him during the season, and it's just a matter of, he was responding and he chose yours to respond to. So
he totally did. I would have been fine with the response on the record if he didn't use a little emoji. He used a little emoji, that little guy that's got his little hand on the chin. That's like, that just set me off, dude. I was like, no way. I was like, no, don't use an emoji. Just be straight with me. Come on.
I was just listening to the other day, the Section 10, and them like really being like, God, what happened with Bruzzo and Travis Shaw? Like, we gotta talk to him and find out what's going on.
Yeah, you know what's funny is those guys, they especially Steve, the producer of Section 10.
Yeah.
He follows my feed because he likes to see my obscenities and stuff. And he caught the war, and I think he blew it up. And it was so hilarious when he blew it up, because that's really the first Twitter war I ever really got into where somebody had actually responded back, and it gets you so hot. Like my forehead started sweating, and like my hands got all clammy, and I'm like, oh God, what do I say? Like,
right.
I have to be smart. And if I don't do it fast, I'm going to sound like an idiot. And then
yeah.
I sound like an idiot anyway when I respond back to him. But there's that whole thing, I think, with Twitter. If you don't respond quick enough, and I've been told this, if you don't respond quick enough, then you're thinking too hard and you've already lost. So
it was
a quick shot. It was a shoot back, like, dude, leave me alone. What the fuck? You're a professional ball player. What's the matter? I shouldn't have said what I said. I was feeling so emotional that night. Like, somebody had retweeted a picture of him, like this cute, really cutesy picture of him, like smiling with the Red Sox hat on. And, you know, I was just such in a bad mood those 3 minutes that I saw the tweet. And I just responded back like such an asshole. I'm all, dude, if I see your face again, I'm going to puke, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was such an asshole move of me. Like, I even told my wife, and she's like, what's the matter with you? You're so jealous. You're jealous of professional baseball players. And it's probably true. You know, I was redshirted when I was in college, so I never got to do anything about it. And that's probably why I'm striking back at him, because he's got that like entitlement thing. And I know that his family is involved with baseball and stuff. And I just went for the jugular. And those guys, ever since they started, what they really are is they started off as a therapy session for me. Like, I bet, like, this is really embarrassing. Like, I would call them and leave messages just for the hell of it. Like, I would just leave messages if I was pissed, if I was happy, because nobody around my family wants to hear it. They're so sick and tired of hearing me complain about the Red Sox. Like, that voicemail is just like I owe them money. Like, I should be paying them therapy bills. And Carabas knows it. I mean, it's very humbling.
And it's funny too, because a lot of times I think at one point somebody started it and was asking, I wonder, you know, what other fan bases are like on Twitter. And aside from the obvious, like the Blue Jays fan base and stuff like that, like, I've always wanted to kind of research into that. Like, what really is, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a really random team, like the Phillies. What is their, and the Cardinals, like, what is their Twitter fan base like in comparison?
It's nothing like, dude, I think the Red Sox Twitter is just ridiculous. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. All this diseased, heartbroken, going gray freaks, dude, just holding on to a prayer.
Yeah, just people, you know, basically on the verge
demanding
of
it.
Jumping off of new Big Poppy Bridge, basically.
Yeah, seriously. it's so right. After one game, too. After one inning.
Totally, yeah. It's game three of the season, and what are we doing? Thanks a lot, David Price.
Yeah, Jesus. Thanks, David. That's another one. Jesus, don't get me going. I mean, what the...
I was going to bring him up when you were talking about how much money Travis Shaw makes and how you would, if you were making $800,000 to $1 million, like, you wouldn't care. And it's funny to me, and they talked about this on Section 10, about how David Price and a lot of other people are responding to people saying things. But then I guess you go back to, like, and I say this to some people at my work, as well, who we are not making even close to $100,000, and saying to them, like, everybody is gooey on the inside, no matter how hard their shell on the outside is or seems to be, or that they make it out to be. Like, we all are gooey. So I guess to them, like, it's,
I love that.
It's how much you are going to read and respond to and care about the trolls, I guess. I mean, if you're an athlete or a celebrity or whatever, like you kind of either have to be ready for, you know, it's kind of like Brandon McCarthy. I'll bring this up because this just happened yesterday. You know, he was one of many who did a tweet in regards to Carrie Fisher dying, and I actually brought it up on my Twitter.
Right, I saw
that. Dude, you got to pick the... She has been dead for less than an hour, and you're like talking about how all of our dads were...
Please, yeah.
Just... I don't know if there's a right time for it, but
rubbing one out
in an hour after she dies definitely is not. And, you know, if you're in the spotlight and you have so many people following you, like you can expect, especially if you say something dumb like that, for people to kind of be jumping on you.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you know, what you just said is gorgeous. I mean, the gooey thing, I'm going to tell that to my son. I love that. You know why? Because I love that analogy. Like, we're all hard on the outside, regardless of what we're doing or how much money we make or whatever. But on the inside, we're goo, and we're you know, like people, regardless, because David Price, man, that guy makes, I think it's like $50,000 a pitch or something like that. So like, that's totally it, man. I love that phrase. We're gooey. I love gooey. We are gooey.
So, okay, we are so far off track. So anyways, I've gone back, like I said earlier, I went back and just randomly picked a game just because I wanted to watch some baseball last night. I also have been going back and watching Chris Sale's appearances from last season.
Ooh, what a good idea.
Just to really like...
He's crazy, isn't he?
So good. I mean,
he's scary, man.
Yeah.
He scares
me. I can't
me.
Wait to see what he can do.
Yeah, he scares me. I mean, as long as he knock on wood, and I'm knocking with every fucking hand I have here, man. Knock on wood, he stays healthy because
he's a
force. You know why? Because he's got it, man. He's got that it, dude. He's got that fighting ass. Fucking, I don't know where he gets it from because he doesn't look like he'd be that way, but he's got like that tough ass. I'm gonna fucking strike your shit out.
Yeah. Okay?
Yeah, you know what I mean?
He's like a Randy. He really is like Randy Johnson.
He is Randy
like
Johnson. Holy
he
shit!
He is tall and lanky and
in a bull.
Just
fucking bull.
Just like aggressive on the mound. I mean, he's great. Like I'm really enjoying. I mean, I probably saw him, you know, pitch a couple of times over the course of last season, but now watching all these other games,
I'm just
excited.
It's just amazing. You know, real fast. I honestly. You know, remember Jake Peavy?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'd like to use him and talk to him. Maybe I'll send a tweet to David Price and tell him this and say, dude, this is the problem, right? Look, you have Jake Peavy, and he was good for the Giants. I remember watching him here. He was great for the Giants. I would like to say, you know why he wasn't ridiculed that much in Boston? Because he sucked ass. He sucked. He fucking sucked. Even when we won,
he was not
he sucked. You know why? Because he fucking tried his balls off.
Yeah.
He looked like he was fucking trying his fucking nutsack off. Like he was going to explode because he was so fucking pissed. And that's why Boston fucking loved him. Because I don't even remember what his fucking record was. And then you look at David Price, okay? And this is what I want to tell him. Maybe he'll listen to this podcast. Who knows? And I want to say, dude, you know what? Look, when you give up a bomb, don't do those fucking short breaths. Those short, shallow fucking breaths in that little dry spitting fucking, hey, I'm up. He does that little fucking, with his shoulders. Oh boy. Give me the ball. No. Just fucking go to acting class. Show me some shit. Show me some, I'm going to see some, you know, like damn or something, you know? I mean, I know it hurts him. I know it does. It sucks to be humiliated in front of millions of people, but fucking look like you give a shit, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, fucking please. You know,
and look like you're determined to turn it around, as opposed to like, you know, it looks like we can see you beating up on yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
On the mound, you know, like
I would like to tell him, dude, just be Jake Peavy. Just look like you give a shit. I mean,
even have a little bit of John Lackey, like Lackey totally turned it around. And he was the big and I used to see this when he was in Anaheim because of, you know, I'm surrounded by Angels fans here. Like all my friends, my wife, you know, we used to go to a few games a year. Now we don't go as much because of the kids, but yeah. Seen John Lackey since season one. I was actually at game seven of the World Series when they won.
Oh my God.
When the Angels won.
Wow. They beat the Giants.
Yeah.
I was on the opposite end of that. I mean, watching it, man, that fucking killed me. Oh my God.
That was intense.
Oh my God.
And all those glorious thunder sticks and the rally monkeys.
The rally monkey, dude, that little bastard. Oh, that little fucking bastard.
There's so many things about the Angels that drive me nuts. But anyways, you know, seeing like, and I remember he did it in Boston and people used to get on him for it when he would somebody would do something in the field and he would just stare them down and
I love
pissed
that.
Off and whatever. I mean, at least he had some fire to him though, you know, I mean,
yeah, I love it.
That's uncool to do that, but he definitely, I love that how much he turned it around. And as I was going to say, when we were talking before, I hate saying this out loud, but I really do hope that somebody, I think Hanley did that this last season. You know, I think everybody had kind of given up on him and he kind of was a big failure and he completely turned that around on its ear this year. And I don't think Pablo Sandoval is going to do that, but I would love to see him somehow.
He's going to hit this year, dude.
I hope.
I really do. I had my share of ridiculing him, but you know what? I've seen him too much here in San Francisco that he's never going to be a 320 hitter, you know, but he's like a 280 hitter, but he's clutch. The guy's fucking clutch. And he has been opposite. Like he did nothing like he did in San Francisco. Like, and I'm not even talking about the postseason, but the guy used to try. I mean, he just fucking got squished here, man. No pun intended. He got fucking squished. Like fucking, wow, I've never seen such a bad transfer before in my life. Like, I was watching it unfold and I'm like, oh my God, dude, he's going to get run out of here. Nobody's going to know who he is. You know,
I'm hoping that year off, kind of like what Lackey had, like I'm hoping that year off from it and being able to see it a little bit from the outside, like does something good for him. So time will tell.
Me too.
Maybe we'll get Mill Whittlebrooks back. The kid back at the hot corner.
Whittlebrooks.
you also are a huge Celtics fan.
Yes.
And did you get to go to any, go to any Boston Garden games back in their heyday back then?
Limited. Maybe once a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was the Bruins were a big deal. The Bruins my sister was an ice skater. So it was kind of like the ice skating was a thing and we were always around the rink. So we were always at the Garden, but I was only at the Garden a little bit to see the Celtics. I saw Bird, of course. I saw Ainge.
Oh, you did see Bird. Yeah, you saw those guys play in person. Oh, that's great.
Dude, Larry Parrish and all that shit. Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. But, you know, I was out here when they did it, you know. I mean, 86, I remember, but I don't remember what year was that? 2007, right? When they beat the Lakers?
Garnett years?
Yeah, 2007.
Yeah.
That was like, you know, that was like, I could, and that was in the New Garden, right? Wasn't that the New Garden?
Yeah, I think that was New Garden.
The TD Garden. But that place, the old Garden rivals Fenway. You know, it was the same cathedral, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. How, like, I've never been to Madison Square Garden.
So you went to a lot more Bruins games then?
Yes.
When you were little, yeah.
Bruins. Didn't like it. Hated it.
Really?
Yeah, I hated it. I'm not ashamed to say it. I hated it. I didn't understand the game.
Yeah.
It looked as stupid as it would look to anybody who had just turned it on for the first time when you see the puck going back and forth with people trying to score and you have no idea why it's taking so long for one goal to go in. And then I really do believe it's an older type thing to watch. Like my son tries to watch it with me and he's just like, where's the puck? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you can't see the fucking puck.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's one of those games where if you can't see the actual ball and you just watch people move around, and it's kind of,
yeah.
And then especially live, if you don't have good seats, it just looks like a bunch of people like herding to one section of the ice.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you know, back and forth.
Yeah.
It's like,
don't say this all too loud because Fox may bring back Fox Tracks.
Uh-oh.
If you talk about this too much. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
God, that was when I was in the peak of my passion for hockey. That was like somewhere okay, between 92 and 95.
Okay.
Because I remember who I was watching and who I was watching it with. I back then, Pavel Bure. I was into Wayne Gretzky was like my number one, and Pavel Bure was like my firm also number one, and so I was a huge Canucks fan.
Canucks, yeah.
For a long time, and then he went to the Panthers, and where were we before that? Hockey. Talked Celtics. We talked
Red Sox.
Let's bring it back to the Red Sox. Like, what are you thinking for this year? How are you feeling about the 2017 season?
I feel good. I feel good as long as there's health with the pitching staff. I think that, you know, it's going to suck without David there. Just visually, it's going to be weird.
Oh God.
It's going to be weird. No matter what, it's just going to be weird. I don't care if they brought in, I didn't even give a shit who they brought in. Like, it's just weird without David Ortiz. I don't.
Edwin Enchiladas.
Yeah. Enchiladas. Yeah. You know, I think that pitching wins down deep, and I think that if it all goes well, I even have hopes for Price this year. I think that I think that, you know, Sale takes the pressure off Price. Price delivers. I just read that Eduardo just got hurt again. I don't fucking trust him.
Yeah, he just tweaked his same knee today.
Yeah, I don't fucking trust him. You know why? I don't like his makeup, so. I'm the wrong guy to ask about him. I just, all the talent in the world. But Craig Kimbrell, dude, he's a fucking heart attack. Watching him is like watching a fucking heart attack. I mean, I actually can't believe how sick he made me last year. him. Like, I mean, he made me sick. You know, I'm hoping that Carson Smith, now that he comes back, that's going to do some damage. I mean, having him healthy is going to be a big addition. It's almost like they went and got another pitcher, you know?
Yeah. So, and with Thornburg.
Yeah, Thornburg. He's going to be good.
He should do something. Yeah, I think so. I think he comes in very under the radar. Like, you know, he doesn't come with a ton of expectations.
Bells and whistles.
I think,
really? Thornburg? And then I looked and I'm like, oh, okay, shit.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, he's another guy that I have to do some off-season
research.
MLB at-bat watching of.
Yeah. Yeah, you just gave me a good idea. I don't know why I don't do that.
It's easy too, like for guys like him, because, you know, for Sale, I've just been not even watching the White Sox offense. I've just been, you know, skipping to his half of the inning.
Right.
And with Thornburg, like, you know, you're jumping to one inning of a game or whatever. It's just having to find where it is and
Yeah. Set up role.
But I'm
optimistic. I mean, I'm really curious to watch Benintendi and Betts this year. I love watching them. I don't want to get too close to Xander because I think he's going to be gone at some point. So I'm like,
yeah, I agree with that.
You know what I mean? I want to love him, but I'm such a little bitch. Like I hate when they get rid of people, and I think it's just with Boris and stuff. I don't think he's going to stay. It just smells that way for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah.
I hope Hanley stays Hanley. I really do. I hope he has grown up
without
a lot in
Poppy
a year.
There. Yeah. You gotta hope he can have that fire in him still.
I hope. And then, you know, we don't have Clay Buchholz to make fun of anymore. How's that?
I know.
What the fuck? It's weird. That's weird because he's been there a long fucking time. Like a long time.
I remember like being so amped during his no hitter. Like, like being so excited and thinking like this is God. And even saying that makes me think of John Lester, and that just makes me sad. Still,
it's ridiculous. Yeah,
he was the last. He was the pitcher that I saw my second game at Fenway, and I mean, I went out to Boston and I saw two games. I saw a Friday night game and a Saturday day game.
Oh, yeah.
And the day game, I was behind home plate, like seven rows back or something, and got to watch Lester. And I think I watched him in Anaheim two other times. So I was really bummed when they got rid of him. And I hope we get to face the Cubs in the postseason.
So do I.
I really do. Like, even if some of those guys aren't there, like, I just want Theo to be there and for us to just demolish them somehow.
Crush them. I want Joe Madden to be crushed.
Yeah. Same thing. Like, Madden, you know, I watched him because he was out here with the Angels.
Yeah.
And I just remember, like, being so frustrated with him as the Rays manager too. And enough with every shift and everything.
I respect him, but come on. No.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what happens this year. Like, I think it could be a really, like, could and should, honestly, like, offensively, we've lost Poppy, which, I mean, is a huge loss in all realms. But I mean, that's, you know, that's 40 home runs, really, if you're going to, I mean, 40 home runs, 125 plus RBIs this past season that you really aren't replacing.
No, they aren't. They didn't. I mean, it's just going to be less. I mean, not as high scoring. I hope. They don't have to.
And
I don't know who the clutch is going to be.
No. You're hoping that the pitching kind of
sucks that up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to be 15 to 7 games anymore. And hopefully it's, you know, 6-3 or 6-2 wins instead.
Yeah, I agree.
But I'm curious to see how it all goes. I'm curious to see what happens with Farrell. You know, I think if they were to take a first round exit again, depending on how, if everybody's healthy and kind of everything goes the way it should, and they were to take a first round exit, like, that could be detrimental to his stay.
I agree.
And then what are you going to do? I mean, Lavulo's gone now.
Yeah, that they fucked the pooch on that one, man. They shouldn't have let him go. Yeah. He was good. Yeah. The clubhouse, the kids loved him. Everything I've read, they all loved him. So.
Yeah. But yeah, hopefully a good, you know, I hope that it doesn't take another couple of years off of us. The past, you know, last season was just so crazy making.
Yeah, I've never really been through a season like that where they were so good and yet they sucked so bad at times. And then they had the best offense I've ever seen in the history of the game. And then they fucking would lose 5 in a row. And then, like, what kind of a team was that? It was the most inconsistent heart attack. Like, like, I've never seen anything like that before, ever. I've never been through anything like that before. I mean,
that ending really was like that.
Personified it. Like,
It was like the Francona collapse all in like a week instead of like a month or more.
It was
just
fucking Indians.
So,
God,
yeah.
Damn it. Anyway.
Yeah. And to lose it to Tito, like, fucking, to have to watch him and Napoli and
Travis Shaw was happy that they won because he's from fucking Cleveland and he tweeted it. And I tweeted to him. I'm all, really, dude? Seriously? You just fucking tweeted that you're happy that they fucking lost. What the fuck are you saying?
Yeah, and you got to see LeBron in the stands.
Yeah, happy, waving his fucking, going crazy, doing his dance.
Putting his Yankees hat in his back pocket.
Yeah, you fucking douche.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of solidified that.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, well, I think we basically have run completely the gamut on all of this.
Yeah, man. Thank you for your time.
So,
I know your wife's waiting for you, man. You know,
thank you very much for finally making this happen. And that is on, you know, on amazing terms.
Yeah.
You know, it was well worth having this conversation. And now we can finally talk on the phone.
Fuck yeah, dude.
we finally took the lid off of that.
We could be friends, dude. We could be friends.
You guys have all witnessed, like, the That was basically like us jumping around home plate in celebration.
Yeah. I have a new friend now I can talk to.
There's got to be some way to like digitally create some.
I know, there should be.
Austin can do it. Austin is the guy who creates those funky like faces over players. Like,
yeah,
Austin,
yeah.
I know you're listening to this. You got to put Joe and my face on like two baseball players and have us just jumping around on the field.
hugging, yeah. Dude. Yeah, man,
that was big man hug. Right there.
Yeah. And I'll send to my family too. Anyway.
Yeah, they will love that.
Yeah, they'll love that.
For all of you listening, you can find Joe and all of his love and hatred for our sports teams on Twitter at JBJR. Bruzzese, which is B-R-U-Z-Z-E-S-E.
Oh, yeah. It's because I'm a junior. That's why I put that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so it's JB Junior Bruzzese.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Okay.
So that's where you can find him on Twitter and follow him during the Red Sox season so that you can see him try to get blocked by people that he doesn't like.
Yes.
And see if he's successful at that. You can also hear him. I'll throw this out to Section 10. Find the Section 10 podcast and you can hear some of Joe's late night voicemails on their podcast. So all the guys
speak
and think very highly of their boy Bruzzo for a good reason. So everybody make sure if you didn't listen to the episode with Joe and I where we talk about being dads, make sure you check that one out. That's the episode before this, and we will all do a little play out, and you'll get to hear some Umphrey's McGee that you're kind of hearing right now underneath all of this, and you'll get to hear some of that as we play out, and maybe you'll see me and Joe doing that on the field man hug dance at an Umphrey's McGee show or a fish show sometime next year.
Fuck yeah.
All right. All right, everyone. That was Joe Bruzzese and me in our Fork in the Road conversation, talking a lot about sports and music and some other things, and really trying not to rile him up too much about things like politics and whatnot. So thanks again for tuning in. Thanks again to Joe for taking the time to record with me. I'm really glad that we did. That definitely brought our friendship up to, I don't know, Joe, what he's level 7 or 8 of 10 now. Now we just need to actually meet and shake hands and hug and hang out. You can find Daddy Unscripted on pretty much all social media formats. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, all under Daddy Unscripted. And you can drop me a line at daddyunscripted@gmail.com. Love to hear your input and your thoughts on who we should have on the show. I love that feedback. I love getting that information from you guys. So thanks again to everybody who has done that already in the past. And I am trying to get some of those people on, working hard on it now. So I appreciate your help also for those of you who have reached out to other people for me on my behalf. Just trying to make the show better in 2017, you know, get some good guests. We've got some great people that are in the works, getting ready to do some more remote recordings. So definitely make sure you pay attention. We've got some really, really astounding people coming on. So I'm excited about that. Again, I can't not say thank you to Umphrey's McGee for allowing me to play their music on the podcast. I'm really excited about that partnership. So make sure you check them out at umphreys.com. It is now, January, and they are already doing some shows, but they have a lot coming up. So make sure you check them out and see if they are playing near you, if you are ready to rock and maybe have your face melted a little bit by some amazing music. Check them out. So stay tuned for the next episodes that should be coming out in a week or so. Thanks, you guys.